Golf Smarter number 94 for October 2, 2007.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
Actor and fellow golf nut Malcolm McDowell.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Welcome and thanks for downloading the Golf Smarter podcast. I appreciate you spending some time with us. I know your time's valuable, so it means a lot to me that you continue to download the Golf Smarter podcast. Now, I received an email this morning from Lou Valencia in Edgewood, Maryland, which is near Baltimore. And Lou said some things that I wanted to address because I've heard it before. And he says, I've downloaded all your past episodes and am currently listening to them in order, so it may be a little while before I can catch up. Right now I'm on episode number 80 and listen to about 5 to 10 a week. I listen mostly at work, so while working, in my mind, I'm playing golf. Lou, first of all, don't do that while you're working. Concentrate on what you're supposed to be doing. But if you are listening right now at work, hey everybody, Lou's listening to a podcast right now. I'm sorry, that was very mean. Now, addressing the idea of listening to them in order, listen to the most recent episode and then go back and listen to the older ones because you want to stay up to date on what Kenny has to say and what we're giving away. But otherwise, the content is always going to be fresh. That is the goal here. There's no specific order. But the way I've designed this content is that every episode will be fresh, whether you hear it for the first time today or if it's the second time today or if you heard it a month and a half ago. So go ahead and listen to them in order, but stay fresh with us as best you can. Today, Kenny Nicholson of Edwin Watts Golf will answer questions about getting fitted after you make a purchase, about new stand bags, used and wet balls, and shafts on ping clubs. So here's a great story. A couple weeks ago, I had the privilege to play golf with Dr. Joe Parent at Ojai Valley Inn, and while we were playing, one of his students and regular playing partners was playing a hole ahead of us. After the round, he joined us at the 19th hole, and we had great stories and a lot of laughs. So I had my portable recorder with me, and luckily, he agreed to be interviewed. This is Malcolm McDowell, the actor. His most famous role was probably as Alex in A Clockwork Orange, but his list of film and TV credits are tremendous. Most recently, you may have seen him on TV episode of HBO's Entourage or ABC's Heroes. And when we conducted this interview, the movie Halloween had just been released the week before to big box office earnings. Welcome, Malcolm.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You love playing golf.
It's a great passion of mine. I'm an addictive personality, I think they call it. Is it a personality or something? But I started very late in life. I thought it was, you know, an old man's game. I refused to play with my friends. And they said, come on, play golf. Absolutely not. I'm a tennis player. Anyway, I did my knee in, as it were, and I came out with some friends about 6 years ago, and they go. I said, "I'll just drive the thing. I'm not going to play." But anyway, I hit one ball in the air, and I was hooked. And then I started to get instruction. I may as well learn the right way to play.
And you did a golf movie. Was that when you just started playing, or had you already been hooked at that point, or where did that fall in line?
Strangely enough, I did a golf movie about Bobby Jones called Stroke of Genius, and it was a wonderful experience. You know, I did actually have a golf scene, where I was hitting golf balls as Mr. Rourke in Fantasy Island. And we were in Hawaii, and we were hitting, it was a par three, big downhill to a sort of a bowl of a green. And I remember saying, oh, just give me the club. And I, you know, got it on the green pretty much every time. Now, they CGI'd it. You know, they made the ball go 50 million miles, you know, and because it was supposed to be magic. But and I went, well, it's not that difficult, this game, is it? Of course, I was playing. I was very relaxed because I was acting a part. And We all know golf is a very psychological, torturous game, and we never know who is going to show up at the course in any one given day. So, and things that you get very excited about learning and you think, thank God, this is a huge breakthrough, you come back the next day and it's gone. You can't find it. It's so elusive. It's so elusive. It's a great life lesson. Is that you never take anything for granted, ever. And as soon as you start to get a little cocky about, hey, you know, I can really move, I can move the ball at will, you'll double-cross it and it'll go out of bounds. The next shot, swear to God, we all know that.
Absolutely. And do you love that elusiveness about this game? Do you love that challenge? Or is it so frustrating at times you just say, I'm done. I can't do this anymore to myself?
No, I love it because pretty much everything in my life I control, sort of. My wife wouldn't agree with that, but you'll never control anything on a golf course. And the more pissed you get, the worse you play, of course. So if you get angry with it and start throwing clubs, then you're dead.
Right.
But I'm not the kind of person that will walk away from it. I mean, I remember years ago, I was doing a film with Blake Edwards, who's a brilliant director. You know, he did all the Pink Panthers with Peter Sellers. And I said to him, you know, we were talking in between setups, and I said, I'm thinking of buying some golf clubs. I may, you know, take it. He went, Malcolm, don't. He went, you're not the kind of person that can play golf. And he goes, and I'll tell you this, neither am I. He said, I took my clubs and I chucked them in the Pacific Ocean. I mean, you're not serious. He said, oh, yes, I am. And that was Blake Edwards, for God's sake.
And did you take that as a challenge, or do you heed his advice at that point? And when did you start playing from that?
No, I stayed with tennis for a while longer. But, you know, I was in my late 50s when I took it up. So you can do it. I mean, you know, it doesn't matter how old you are. That's the other brilliant thing about golf. And what other game is there where you can hit one shot in a round as good as the best player on the planet? You can't do it in any other sport. In any other game, it's not possible. But you can. I can hit a ball 200 yards and get it within 3 feet of the flag once in a lifetime. You know, I've had a hole in one. I mean, you know, that's as good as Tiger, for God's sake, and he's the best that's ever been. So, you know, it's such a great thing for you know, beginners or intermediate players. There's always something to get excited about and to have fun about. And, you know, and that's important. It gives you a lot back.
And you were saying that not only can you have a shot like Tiger, you can have that, but you can do it on the same venue that they do it. You know, you can play. It's not like you can go play softball at Fenway Park, you know, or you can play soccer at Wembley Stadium. You got to go out and play in the street or something. But for golf, you can play on the best courses and have that great shot and feel like a king for a moment because the rest of the round, of course.
That's absolutely true. I think the two most magical, I've had three magical sort of rounds of golf where I didn't play particularly well. I don't remember how I played, but I do remember the old course of St. Andrews, and I remember going out late. But, you know, it stays very late in the summer in Scotland, because so far north. And we came in around 10 o'clock in the evening, crossed the bridge, the whole deal, all the photographs, the whole thing. It was actually pitch dark when we teed up on the 18th tee. We thought, well, we're going to finish this round. And we hit off, you know, and the groundskeeper, a guy called Gordon, he went, hey, Malcolm, were you playing last night? Because in this morning, I noticed there were four balls on the fairway. I said, we made it to the fairway. Couldn't even find the balls, you know. It was great. I must admit, I did go into the clubhouse of the Royal and Ancient and to use the loo. And I did steal a comb, I have to say. I will admit to that, but I'm sure there are thousands of combs missing every year. But that was a great thrill. And also, you know, the whole thing in Scotland and golf is such a different thing. You know, it's a way of life. And they, when they heard that I was doing a film about Bobby Jones, who's an American from Atlanta, you know, whose great years were in the 20s, they honestly genuflect, and they remember, and they know the great stories of Bobby Jones, and what a great, great sportsman, and what a great man he was, and what an ambassador for golf, you know, and so that was, it was absolutely beautiful to see, you know, it's like Jack Nicklaus, they put him on a £5 note in Scotland, because they, he's a true hero to them, you know, and of course the man is a gentleman and he plays the game. See, that's the other thing, is the traditions of the game are so beautiful, and it's the history of the game that we should all, who play the game, should really take note of. And this game, more than any other, I think, people really do understand and know the history of it. They know about old Tom Morris. They know about, you know, his son and the tragedy there. And they know about, you know, Varden and the grip and the change of equipment. And then, of course, the Americans came in, and Bobby and the, you know, and all those guys, Sarazen and Walter Hagen. For God's sake, we're talking truly the greats of the game. And it's fantastic, you know. And here we are living in an era where we are witnessing, you know, this man, Tiger Woods. It's like what it must have been like for people to witness Bobby Jones.
It really is amazing to be witness to what Tiger's doing right now, isn't it? I love being part of it. I, you know, remembering when Muhammad Ali was at his prime as a boxer. It's just an incredible feeling, something you can't wait to share with the kids and the grandchildren, type of thing.
That's right. It's so, I mean, the feeling you get, you know, when I first saw Lou Hode, you know, win Wimbledon, but a tennis player's career's 5 years, 10 at the best. I mean, 5 years at the top, number one, if you're lucky. A golfer, of course, they can stretch it. I think Jack Nicklaus was 46 when he won his last Masters, you know, which was amazing. I think 46. I mean, that's, well, he is a phenomenon too. I mean, you know, how often do you get guys like that? Very rare. They're rare, and we are blessed that we are watching. Well, I've been able to watch Nicklaus, and you know, in his prime. And, of course, there's a few other great ones, too. And, you know, Watson, certainly one of the greats, and Lee Trevino, people like that, and Gary Player, and, you know, and but nothing compares, honestly, to watching Tiger when he's on a... Well, I mean, just to see him change his game, you know, he'll play at Hoylake and win the British Open by... basically, never using a driver and hitting low stinger shots.
And what an education it is for every golfer to be able to watch someone like that and say, oh, wait a minute, you don't have to hit it hard every time. You don't have to pull out the driver every time. Is that you can play, you can golf smarter and really improve your game.
That's right. I mean, it's phenomenal. Yeah. And also the women, fantastic. Absolutely. You know, I always used to love watching women's tennis because I could see it. You know, it was like watching men in slow motion. I'd probably get killed for that. But it's a bit the same with the golf swing. You can see every part of it because it's much slower club head speed. You know, I don't care what you say. They just don't have the strength to get that club head speed that these guys get. You know, some of these guys, they hit the ball 300, 400 yards, you know. And I think there's a great lesson. It's great for players like myself to watch women play because you really do see the transfer of weight and you see, you know, the hands come through. You can see it more easily, that's all. Some of them can hit the ball. I mean, I think Laura Davis can drive it 290, 300 yards, which is as far as most men, let's face it.
When you got a chance to work on the Bobby Jones movie, Stroke of Genius, what did that do for your appreciation of the game? Or did it enhance it, or it was just another job that you were doing?
No. it brought me in touch with the roots of the game and the traditions. And, you know, I got to really know a lot, of course, about Bobby Jones, which I wouldn't have known particularly. And I read Mark Frost's books. Now, everyone should read, who's interested in golf and loves golf, should go out and get every damn thing ever written by Mark Frost. I have only met him once, but he wrote a brilliant biography on Bobby Jones, which came out only a year or so ago. He also wrote The Greatest Game Ever Played, which they made into a movie. A friend of mine, Bill Paxton, directed it. And it's a wonderful book. It's such... He creates the whole period, the era, beside the fact that he's, you know, obviously he loves golf and he's a damn good golfer, but he really gets you going about golf and, you know, about Harry of Arden and about how he had tuberculosis and he was in a sanatorium and all this kind of stuff, which you would never have known. And that's why he had the yips, you know, and stuff like this, the really intimate, small little things. You know, I honestly feel as connected to these people because of this game as I do to Tiger Woods and this new generation of golfers. And also, you know, the fact that Bobby Jones could hit a ball with a hickory shaft 280. 280. He was 40 yards further than the next competitor. And don't forget, he only played golf in the summer. He was a lawyer, and he had all these other careers, and he only played in the holidays. I mean, and he won the Grand Slam. So.
And have you ever played wearing a tie?
No, but you know, I'm plus four is pretty nice. You need them in Scotland; quite chilly. I'm a bit of a fair weather golfer, I'm afraid. Really, I don't find much fun in playing in driving horizontal rain, as I did at a beautiful course called King's Barnes. One of the absolute most beautiful courses in Scotland. It's a new one, designed by a couple of American Californians, actually, and it's a fantastic course. They got the best of the, you know, the old and the best of the new, and it's one of the most spectacular courses I've ever played, including Pebble, and just amazing. You know, also what's amazing is you begin to learn about, you know, certain architects and. You know, you find what architects you really like the most and what are most sympathetic. I hate people that shove earth around. I think the most beautiful courses to me are the ones that they pretty much leave it as natural as possible. And, you know, that they're my favorite courses, actually. I don't particularly like the ones that are being gouged out, you know. You see these Trump courses that have been, they move so much earth and all that. You know, that to me is, that's sort of Disneyland golf. It's synthetic to me. I love, you know, these courses in Ireland. Of course, they've managed them. They've, you know, they've moved certain things here and there. But, you know, basically it's as the land lies. And I think that's, they're the most extraordinary architects to me. Mackenzie is a good point. You know, Mackenzie's courses are extraordinary. I had the great fortune to play Cypress Point, and I was playing them. The person that was I was the guest of was a lady, and she said to me, Malcolm, how many bunkers do you see coming up to this green? And I went, oh, my God, this... I think I counted 18 or something bunkers. And when we got on the green, she said, now look back. How many bunkers do you see? I couldn't see one. Now that's a great architect. Yeah.
So clearly you use the architecture in a golf course when you're playing for your strategy. I mean, you're obviously studying this. How do you use... your knowledge of golf architecture and your appreciation of it in the strategy of your round of golf?
I mean, I'd like to say that I do that. The truth is, I tee the ball up and I try to hit the crap out of it. I try and hit the damn thing as hard as I can. I mean, I'm saying that I, you know, when I'm out there playing, I just love to see. I played a little McKenzie course up in Napa Valley, and honestly, it's 9 holes, and it's right in the redwoods, and it's one of the jewels I've ever played. It's a jewel because he used just what's there. The redwoods are there, and and I hear that Abandoned Dunes up in Oregon is stunning, and courses like that, you know. I just prefer those. I mean, one of my favorites is Fazio. We talked about that. But those courses, absolutely extraordinary. I played this course called White Columns and in Atlanta. It was just the most magical. Of course, it also depends on, you know, what kind of a time you're having. I was there in the magic hour time, sort of in the evening, you know. It was just sort of the most perfect time. There was nobody there. This friend of mine who I adore called Tim Ware, he's from Florida, he was in the movie with me, and we just had the greatest time. There was just the two of us, nobody else. And sometimes that, you know, that can be the most satisfying and the most fun of all.
I don't know if you remember the line that Alan King had, I think, in the movie Garden State. It opens up, he's standing on the tee box, and there's a long, slow pan across the fairway, and he looks out and he says, "A golf course, nature on a leash."
Yeah.
That was such a beautiful line.
That's a great line, yeah.
So, did you allude to the fact that you've hit a hole in one?
I have. And in fact, I hit it with a rescue, a Sonotec. I think it was 21 degrees, and it was about 205 yards. On the most difficult par 3 on this course, it's a 16, and actually that club has now hit 2, because the person that owned it before, Joe Parent, Dr. Joseph, had the club, and I went, "Oh, I rather like this." He said, "Well, you can have it because I'm now using this other club." So I went, "Oh, thanks very much." And so I was hitting with it, and he'd had a hole in one, and then I did the same thing. And, you know, it's one of those extraordinary things. But this is the weird thing about my hole in one is there's a gentleman here that I used to play with when I first started, who was very sweet to me and used to take me around and say, "Oh, don't hit a driver, hit a 5-iron. You just have to get it over the..." Oh, I didn't really, you know, this course management, and he was helping me. Unfortunately, he got Alzheimer's, and so I try to take him out if I can once or twice, you know, and try to take him out every week or whatever. And so he was actually my partner. And we come to the 16th hole, and every time we've played the 16th hole, he says to me, "I got a hole in one here. I was playing with my son." And I go, "Yes, Phil, I know about that. You told me about that." He goes, "Oh, I hit him," and he tells me exactly the shot, and he tells me every time. He forgets that he's, you know. And so, anyway, this time we get up to the 16th, he says the same thing. "Hey, I got a hole in one." I went, "Oh, great, yeah, I know. Your son, you were playing with your son, right?" "That's right, I was playing with my son." Anyway, I hit off. Now, the pin was, the position was beyond the a trap, and you couldn't actually, you could see the flag, but you couldn't see the actual hole. And so I hit the ball true as come, you know, 5-yard draw. It was a beautiful, beautiful shot. And I was so happy, because if you hit it a little right, you're out of bounds over the road. You're left, you're down the damn barranca. It's one of the hardest things. And I was really thrilled with this shot. And Phil hits his ball, and he hits a pretty good ball, and he's in the bunker. And so we get on the green, and I'm looking for my ball, and I can't find it. And I thought, I thought it made the bunker, you know. I said, "Phil, did you see my ball?" And he looked at me bewildered. He went, no. And I looked round to the pin, and about 18 inches, you know, from the flag, I saw a divot. And I thought, "Oh, my God, don't tell me. I can't be." And I went over and peered down, and there was my ball. And of course, I let out this yell. I said, "Phil, get over here. Look at this. Look at this." And he came up from the bunker. He looked and he went, oh, yeah, I got a hole in one. I went, no, Phil, no, this is my hole in one. He goes, oh, that's jolly good. He got jolly good. So anyway, I was leaping about and screaming and shouting, you know. We finished the round. Of course, the next hole, by the way, I got a double bogey, of course. And we get back to the clubhouse. I tell the pro, and I said, and Phil Burton, you know, he was my witness. I go, Phil, and he goes, what? I went, 16th. And he goes, oh, I got a hole in one there. I said, no, not yours. We're talking about mine now. He did you? Oh, well done.
So, no proof. It's just well, his word against whatever word he's got.
Luckily, the head pro, Jared, who's a lovely guy here at the Ojai Valley Inn, he heard me screaming and shouting and knew something was going on. So he gave me the flag anyway. He said, I knew you'd got it, so...
That's my greatest fear. I've not had a hole in one, but my greatest fear is I don't get to see it go in. And it's over. It's done. It's like, I mean, when you hit it, you knew it felt great. You knew it had all the potential in the world, but you didn't see it go in the hole.
It happened to me on the 10th hole here. I missed my drive, and I was 220 out. And I took my 3-wood and ripped the most beautiful cut shot. And I thought, that was good. That's what I should have done before. And, of course, I get up there, and we're looking for the ball. And, of course, it's in the hole, an eagle, and I didn't see that either. But there's still, it's still quite, you know, thrilling. I mean, I'll take it.
Exactly. It goes on the scorecard.
Yeah.
As a golfer, not as someone who plays a golfer in the movies, but as a golfer, what is the best piece of advice you ever received?
I think, honestly, you're in Dr. Joseph Parent's sort of realm here when you're talking about great advice because, you know, he told me when I was putting, chunking around, and I left my putting, by the way, to last, to really get into. I wanted to get the stroke and look good, you know. I wanted to get the weight transference, you know, the high hands at the end and kind of look good. Before I even bothered with the putting, and I was playing with him, and he went, you know, your ball is way too far. Bring it into your shoes 6 inches. And as soon as I did that, I suddenly started to putt quite well. I mean, it's, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a good putter now, but I'm certainly a lot better than I was and much more consistent. Although, you know, occasionally I do get the yips. But that's all mental, isn't it?
It sure is. And have you ever met a golfer, if you ask him, oh, do you play golf? Yeah, I play golf. Are you any good? Meh. Have you ever met anyone who goes, oh, yeah, I'm really a good golfer?
No, even a sort of scratch player will go, I have my days, but, you know. Because you know if you say, yeah, I'm actually pretty good, you are dead. You are dead in the water. Yeah, I mean.
I've always told my kids, 3 things in life you don't mess with and you don't take for granted: fire, the ocean, and golf. Because as soon as you think you have control on any of those, they're going to bite you.
Absolutely. It's true. I mean, it's very elusive. But when it's happening, there is really no feeling in the world. And I'd say that, being an actor who's won awards in the past and all the rest of it, it pales in comparison. I mean, that's just boring compared to hitting a glorious shot where you know if I just cut this 3-wood, I'll aim at the bunker on the left, I'll cut it in, it'll land like a feather and just trickle to the hole, and it actually happens. You know, or you'll go, you know, and I can draw this one in. And of course, you forget the times, or you don't forget, but you choose not to remember the times that you aim right and it goes even further right. Or you decide to cut it and you're aiming at a barranca and of course, you double-cross it and, it, you know, it's such a mess. And it happens so often. But when you pull it off, when there's no tension in the body at all, and you just let it flow, it's great. I mean, there's nothing like it.
Nothing like it. So, what should we be looking for on the big screen with you these days, and what's next?
Well, it's a fortuitous weekend because the movie that I'm starring in, Halloween, Rob Zombie's Halloween, is number one at the box office. So it doesn't happen very often. It hasn't happened to me. Well, I can't even remember, but I'm so old I can't remember anything. But, you know, it did $31 million over the Labor Day weekend, which is, I think, it's a record for any opening on Labor Day. So it's really great, and, you know, it's a scary movie. It's, you know, it's a big thrill ride, you know, and, you know, he's a great guy, Rob, and I'm thrilled for him because it really validates, and he'll be able to do whatever he wants now.
That's great.
And what's next? You got anything else coming up?
Yes, I've got another film called Doomsday, which is going to open in, I think, in a couple of months. It's another very good director. So I'm busy. I keep busy.
With golf and movies.
Yes. My line is always this. Show me an actor who's a good golfer, and I'm looking at an actor that doesn't work. And that the truth is because you need to be out every other day, don't you, to be a good golfer. You need to be there at least three times a week. But it's great. Being actors make good golfers, and so do musicians, because musicians are all, you know, when they're on tour, they, you know, they get there, they go out and play golf, and they sing or play at night. And it's a perfect thing for them to do. And usually musicians make terrific golfers because they play a lot of golf.
Alice Cooper, who it helped him beat his alcohol and drug addiction.
Yeah. Well, Alice is a wonderful golfer, right, and a nice guy. I've played in this tournament in Scottsdale. He's got this tournament that benefits the kids and all that. And he's a fabulous guy and he's a terrific golfer. I mean, he really is. So, yeah, he must be. Well, I think he was scratched, but he may be three or four now. I don't know, but he's a good golfer.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time. It was fascinating and loved your insight to all this. Thanks.
Pleasure. Thanks.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, the technical specialist at EdwinWattsGolf.com, would like to help answer your questions. And if we use that question on the show, you're going to receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. Now, to submit your question, please go to GolfSmarterPodcast.com and click on the button labeled Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Kenny, we have a bunch of questions, so can we please get started? Or should we start with, hey, Kenny?
Hi, Brad. Yeah, we can get started.
Okay, now that we got that out of the way, the first question comes from Brady Crockett, who lives in Alberta. He lives in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And he says, I work at a private golf course and listen to Golf Smarter and Golf Botter.
No, come on. The first question.
And he listens to both podcasts. Recently, I bought a brand new Callaway X20 irons. A couple days after my purchase, I started listening to you guys, and all you stress is how important it is to have your clubs fitted. I'd like to know if it's worth taking my new clubs to a smith and have them fitted, a golf professional, and have them fitted or just play them as they are. I am on a different page. Wait a minute. I am hitting them beautifully and wonder if it's worth the fit. I'm a 15 handicap, have just started shaping my shots, put some spin on the ball, and have a 100-plus mile-an-hour driver swing speed and play twice a week. Kenny, what would you recommend?
I mean, first I would look at he's a good ball striker. And he's a 15 handicap. If I could talk to him, I would want to know where his misses are. And that would help me understand a little bit more on this iron question. We do stress getting fitted being extremely important just because, you know, if you're using equipment that's not made for you or fitted correctly, obviously it's going to have an adverse effect on the way that you play. That being said, he's already purchased his clubs and he purchased Callaway's. There's a huge difference with Callaway versus a lot of the other manufacturers out there. Once you have bought them, it's not like you can take them to somebody and have them put on a loft and lie machine and have the lie adjusted or the loft adjusted, because it does have a bore through hosel. So he can still be fitted, but what we would do in our case is we would send those clubs back to Callaway. They actually have to pull the shafts, and then they can adjust them and then put the shafts back in. So you know, a little bit trickier there. And since he's already bought him and he said he's hitting them well, I would just kind of, you know, go with it for a little while. If he has a chance to get fitted, go ahead and get fitted and see. But, you know, it can be fixed after he's already bought him.
Well, if he works at a private country club, I'm sure they have demo days there. He can talk to somebody, right?
Oh, I'm sure he's in, you know, he's kind of in a real good situation where he works at a golf course. Somebody should be able to look at a swing and look at the divot and things like that and be able to tell whether he needs to have them adjusted or what have you. But it sounds like he's striking them well, though. I mean, he said he's hitting them good.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so...
Now he's just got to work on his mental game, and he'll bring himself down to single digit.
Exactly.
And we need to make a brief apology to our listeners who are thinking that it's their earphones that are having a problem. I find it interesting that the day that I read in the newspaper that Skype is not doing as well for eBay as they had hoped, that our Skype signal is not as clear as it usually is.
And it's disappointing.
Yes, we're not thrilled about it. But we're going to plug away. Yeah, we're going to keep going, though. Michelle Muyen from the Netherlands has written back to us again. He had a number of questions, but the one that I wanted to focus on this morning, Kenny says he prefers to play ping golf clubs.
Attaboy.
So, yeah, there you go.
Don't take that.
He says, on the Edwin Watts Golf website, you're able to order steel or graphite, but on the Ping website, you can choose multiple shafts, for example, a True Temper or a UST. Is Edwin Watts Golf also able to deliver the clubs with these shafts?
That's a real good question. And the way that our website works real quick is it's tied in through our Mozart, basically our inventory system. We do not stock those clubs, so there's no way for us to create a SKU for it in the website. We can, but if you want something custom, all you have to do is pick up the phone and call us. We can order any club from any manufacturer with any shaft that is available and get it to you. Typically, it'll ship within 24 to 48 hours from the manufacturer if they've got all the components there. And if you called today, needed a ping driver with a specific shaft and they had everything in stock and you needed it tomorrow, I could make that happen. You know, I mean, it's we've been doing it long enough, and our relationship with the manufacturers is strong enough that, you know, all things considered equal where they have the product available, we can definitely have that done. So it was a real good question.
Excellent. And that was a real good answer. Thanks, Michelle, for writing back to us again. And speaking about writing back to us, the next question comes from American Military Overseas, Paul Dundas. I don't know why I remember this, but Paul was one of our first winners that we ever gave away product. We gave I think it was an OGO travel bag, and Paul was the winner of that, and he sent me pictures of himself traveling around Europe with his bag. So he writes, actually, I'm so glad that somebody wrote this question because, Kenny, I think I've been bugging you about the same question for quite a while. And he says, Kenny, I need a new carry bag. And I've had my eye on getting a Sun Mountain SI 3.5 stand bag with Hug 2007 since it got a good rating from Golf Digest earlier this year. Since the season's drawing to a close, I was wondering if it was better to wait to see what manufacturers come out with for 2008 and when do they typically come out with their new products.
The thing about golf clubs is that technological advances can be extreme sometimes. So when a new product comes out, it's like, wow, you got to be kidding me. On a bag, it might not have that wow effect all the time. So if you can get a bag at a closeout price and you're happy with it, and you like the style and the way that it looks to you, then by all means, just go ahead and get it because the technological advances aren't going to be that great. Typically, what we find with new products being launched, they usually launch at the PGA show in Orlando, usually in January, end of January, around Super Bowl weekend. But that's not always the case, but typically that's what you find. That's when you'll see new products being launched. But as far as bags go, if he's found that Sun Mountain bag and he likes it and he's going to get it at a good price, then go ahead and pick it up.
I'm curious, when people are looking at bags, I don't know if you get to talk to people because you're not on the floor as much, but what is it that on a carry bag, let's work with carry bags, that really makes people go, this is what I've been looking for? Is it separating each club? Is it the weight? Is it the water holder? I mean, what do you see as being a primary concern for people?
really pockets, and then also the inside lining of the golf bag. If it's got 14 individual club slots, or if it has full length dividers where it separates six compartments, whenever you carry a bag, obviously the way that you pick it up and put it down all the time, the clubs are always falling to the bottom part of the bag. So your grips are always getting tangled up between each other. So typically what you find is one that can separate the compartments or have 14 individual pockets. The reason you don't find a lot of them that have 14 individual compartments is because weight becomes an issue. So I look at ease of use, easily accessible pockets, and the divider compartments is what I look at. And then also look has a lot to do with it as well.
Sure. And you're a walker, so you generally put the bag over your back, right?
That is correct, yeah.
Because I prefer to push them. But do you like to carry a lot of stuff with you, or you just take a couple things out each day? Or do you have stuff that you store in your bag at all times?
I mean, I have stuff that I store in there all the time. Obviously, golf balls, tees, and a couple extra gloves. But for the most part, I don't – a lot of people use that bag also as their regular cart bag, and they've got two dozen golf balls in there or something. But when you think about it, if you're going to walk, I mean, hopefully you're not going to lose that many golf balls out on the course. You know, take a few golf balls out, save a little bit of weight, because it's where the ball pocket is. It's obviously heavier on that end of the bag, and all it's doing is putting a little more stress on your shoulders and your back. So anything to lighten it up. I mean, I don't carry a lot whenever I walk.
And which actually leads us to our last question of the day, and this comes from, and I apologize if I don't get the pronunciation correct, and you only left one name, and I don't know if it's your first or last, but Angad, A-N-G-A-D, and he's from Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, and he has a two-part question here, but we address in the new Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast on the Nike Golf Ball Show, will buying and playing used golf balls make any difference?
I mean, I'll be honest, I've picked up a golf ball out of the water and played with it before. What you look at is the cover of the golf ball. You know, if you go to our Golf Better podcast and you can listen to them talk about the way the cover has a huge effect on the aerodynamics of the golf ball. If there's a scuff on there, obviously it's going to, create friction and the ball's not going to travel as far. Now, to what extent is hard to say. If you play with one of those golf balls and you hit a drive and you're like, man, I crushed it, but it's 10 yards shorter than my other ball if I would have used it, it's probably not going to happen. So a lot of people, it's just in the mind. Where I always try to focus on a golf ball, regardless of where you find it or if you buy it brand new, is on the green or around the green. I mean, if you have a ball that is scuffed or, has a mark on it or something, when you putt, obviously that's going to make a difference, a huge difference. So that's where I would be most concerned about it.
And I'll be playing a promo for the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast for the second part of our conversation with Mark Allen of Nike Golf Balls. I'll play a promo for that at the end of today's show. And Angad had one more question. Kenny, if you hit a ball in the rain, does it affect the ball flight?
I would have to think so. If you hit it into the wind, it's going to make a difference. It just depends. If you're out there playing in a downpour, it's obviously going to have some effect on the golf ball. If it's a light rain, probably not a lot.
Well, it's definitely going to have an effect on once the ball hits the ground. It's not going to roll as far, right?
Yeah, it definitely will.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's one reason they don't wet these golf courses where they have PGA Tour events. They want to see the ball land and roll 50 yards. Let's water it down and see how they can do.
And how does it look on TV?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it'll definitely have an effect. To what extent, I don't know. But if he's out there playing in the rain, it reminds me of that commercial where the guy's sitting there by himself and it's a downpour and this guy walks up and it's just flooding and the guy's like, it's fixing to clear up anytime.
that guy
leaves and he's still sitting there just kind of.
He's sitting in that little bathroom, right? He's sitting in the bathroom out in the middle of the rain and he's like, hey.
It's not going to clear up.
No.
He has hope. He has hope.
He's a golfer.
He is.
And so, of course, he has hope. That's the point of being a golfer. We all have hope. Hope that we can finish this podcast. But before we do, we have to give away the Solus Wedge that we've been talking about. And it's a good product, huh? You like the Solus Wedge.
I do. It's a real good wedge. The design, the concept, everything is really nice.
Well,
I mean, there's a lot of different wedges out there, and everybody
sure.
has their own philosophy. But it's definitely worth a try.
And especially if it's free.
Hey, there you go.
And so we'll give one to you if you enter our drawing, because we're going to do it next week. The deadline for entry is noon. Check that. It's noon, October 8th. And we'll shut it down on the website. You know, also, if you want to see if you've won one of our prizes on the podcast, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the contest button, and before you fill out the entry form there, look to the right, and you'll see all the products that we've given away, the date it was given away, and who the winner was. So if you haven't heard the podcast yet, and you want to check to see if you won, that's a quick way to do it. But to enter the drawing, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com, click on the word contest, and fill out the information that includes your shipping information, and there's a verification code as well. Click submit, and you're all set. You only need to enter once per giveaway, because we sort it all out, and we remove and omit the names that don't belong, but we do save different email addresses. That's how we count them. That's not how we sort them. And also, to remind you, we've told you before, but the email addresses are given to Edwin Watts Golf.
We like to send you nice emails.
Yes, we do like to send you nice emails. They like to send you. We're all one big happy golf family here, right?
That's correct. That's the way we like to look at it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Kenny, we'll talk to you next time, and then we'll give away that wedge.
All right, Fred, take care.
Thanks again to Malcolm McDowell for his time and his generous time and great storytelling. We close this week's show with a quote submitted by my friend John Leland, the ambassador of ease. John writes The Joy of Golfing, a golf blog at thejoyofgolfing.com. Please check it out. And because we had an actor on today's show, thought we'd close with a quote from another actor, writer, and golf nut. Larry David, who stars and is co-creator of HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm and was also the co-creator, head writer, and executive producer of the hugely successful TV series Seinfeld. And here's what Larry says about golf, and I'm going to try my best, but I'm not going to put all the anxiety that he has in it. And he says, I'm happy before I play because I think perhaps there's a chance I will do well. Then when I'm playing, I'm utterly depressed. But when I finish playing, I'm thrilled. I'm actually in a better mood because I'm done with the pain and suffering. It's a win-win situation to be done playing, whether I do well or not. If you have any questions, comments, quotes, or requests, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarterpodcast.com. The most basic question for every golfer out there is, which golf ball should I use? This week on the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast, we feature a conversation with the Director of Product Marketing for Nike Golf Balls, Mark Allen.
Typically what we're trying to do is just optimize that dimple pattern so that we can optimize the trajectory and ball flight for that particular player.
Not just dimples, but what happens to a golf ball when I hit it? And why should I know about compression?
If you think about it, you hit a driver, you've got very little loft, you've got a long shaft, you've got high head speed. You're really compressing that ball and working the inside of it. And as you get closer to the greens, you have more loft, shorter shafts, slower club head speed. You're really not penetrating or compressing the ball as much as if you were hitting it off the tee. So the cover, the outer portions of the ball, start to take on more performance attributes than the core does.
It's the Golf Better at Edwin Watts Golf Podcast, where you can also win a couple dozen Nike golf balls of your choice. It's free on iTunes, or listen to it directly at golfbetterpodcast.com.